Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, June 21st. I'm Ray Graff in for Alan Chartok. I begin today's program with a pledge. Today, you will not hear the name Donald Trump, except just now, obviously, nor will you hear the name Hillary Clinton, nor Bernie Sanders. No political open forum today. Today, we take a brief break from the bitter political battle that is dividing this great nation. No, today we talk sports with Daily Gazette executive sports editor Mark McGuire and Marist College Center for Sports Communication director Keith Strudler. Yes, it's sports today on the show. A little bread, a little circus. The number to call is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Sports on Vox Pop after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon daily call-in thing. I'm Ray Graff. The sports world is abuzz this week. LeBron gets another title, shushing the haters. Wimbledon, well, the qualifying rounds are already underway. The MLB All-Star Game coming up in a matter of weeks. The Summer Olympics are just over a month away, and there's no controversy about that. Joining us now is Daily Gazette executive sports editor Mark McGuire and director of the Marist College Center for Sports Communication and our own sports commentator, Keith Strudler. Mark and Keith, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having us back.
Thanks for having me back.
It's a pleasure not having Ira Rizzo on today.
Thank God. It's going to be a great show.
He just brings us all down.
I'm not going negative.
No?
No. I'm okay. Running a positive camp. Right. I'm the Bernie Sanders of this room.
Oh, you see, I said no political names, and there you blew it.
I'm sorry.
The number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also post your comments on Facebook at facebook.com/WAMC Radio or tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, or you can always email us, voxpopwamc.org. But again, the number to call, 800-348-2551. Where do we begin? I guess we begin in Cleveland.
You got to begin in Cleveland, a city of champion.
So it's been, what, 50-some-odd years since they had anything resembling a champion?
Actually, it had been a couple of weeks.
What do you mean?
They actually had won
AHL. You can't count that.
We're counting it.
A minor league hockey.
The AHL is a legitimate league. All right,
to
those
that play and the six people that watch it, of course.
I
thought you weren't going negative.
I know. I'm calling it like it is. It took them 50-plus years.
52 years since the 1964 Browns before for a major league North American team. Cleveland Browns, Jim Brown.
So before the merger, they were the NFL champs.
They were the NFL champs.
Before they called it the Super Bowl. We had typewriters, whatever it was.
Before the NFL was the NFL.
That's right.
It was back in the black and white days. Cleveland, which actually was on TV locally. That's how far back you had to go. It's a monumental feat for that city. That is such an easy joke for so long.
But a great Game 7.
It was,
by the way,
unbelievable.
We turned it on, and we don't watch much pros. I mean, we watch the Knicks, but that doesn't count. And my wife said, "Boy, it feels like a college game," and it really did feel like a March Madness game.
Except they actually hit shots. Yeah, I mean, so it was un. And well, I mean, the pros are their shooting percentage is a little bit better.
Right.
And for Game 7, I will say, I think most of at least myself watching, and I would assume anyone who's watched a team from Cleveland for any period of time, or any of the torture teams. I grew up in Houston. I kind of lived through this through my childhood. And if you've grown up in a city that never had won anything, you assume the other shoe was always going to drop. When that game was close, coming into the final minutes, I think we all kind of said to ourselves, well, here it goes. This is how Cleveland is going to lose the title.
It was amazing. At one point in the third period, the third quarter, Cleveland was ahead by 7. I went in and got literally a soda. And came back, and it was, my wife said, it's tied. I mean, it wasn't even 12 seconds, and the game was tied. It was a fantastic ball game.
And you were figuring, what was the city of Cleveland going to name this loss? Like, what was it going to be? Like, you were already thinking that way.
You were waiting for Steph Curry to be fouled on a three and draining it for a four-point play.
When they were up 4 with the game kind of pretty much, didn't you say, this is it? They're going to be the team that loses up 4 with a few seconds to go. And you kind of felt like that was going
to
happen.
And even to Curry's last shot, the ball goes into the corner, and the seconds are winding down. It took the realization, this is really going to happen.
Yes.
And just to put yourself in the shoes of a Cleveland fan, it's really a joyous moment because you really kind of, even as a fan who had no dog in the fight, you tend to root for those fan bases that just never experienced that. And, you know, they're going to have their parade tomorrow. And they're still on a high right now. If I was a Cleveland fan, I still wouldn't be at work.
Before we started the show, Keith, you were saying that you say LeBron's the best player who ever played. I have questions about that.
I'm one of those people that is always enamored by the new toy, so maybe I'm the wrong. You know, I walk into any store and I'm like, I want that. So I tend to be to jump on the Johnny Come Lately situation. But on that same note, you can go back through. First of all, I happen to believe that athletes evolve through time, so I always believe that the players of today are better than the players of 10 years ago or players in the 10 years before that. I just believe in the Darwinian process. So I tend to think we have better athletes now than we used to have. But even in the contextual kind of world in which we exist, I mean, they're incredible talents playing around. He played against, you know, a team that won 73 games. He can do it at every position. I mean, that block that he made at the end of the game, which really won the game, that block more than just about anything that happened, you know, in the waning moments of the game. Who was shooting that? It was about to hit a layup.
Iguodala.
All right. I mean, out of nowhere, blocks it clean. I mean, that to me, that just kind of typified. The difference between, I think, LeBron and everyone else is LeBron, his entire career, wherever he goes, becomes almost a favorite to win the title. Now, Michael Jordan was amazing, but he stayed in one spot, and they rotated people around him, and he had all-star. LeBron literally goes anywhere, and while he may not have
the same— He's only gone two places.
He's been three places. Well, yeah, but he came and he came back.
Right.
He had a Cleveland team, went to a Miami team, and went back to a Cleveland team. So, I mean, those are three different stops. And that Cleveland team that he left, what, did they win, like 19 games the next year?
Yeah, which made him very popular in Cleveland. And now he's sort of getting everybody back. And so that's a nice side story.
The one thing I do want to say is when looking at players of different eras, I tend to extrapolate players from past eras and kind of convert what they would be today. Babe Ruth would be an all-time great if he were playing today. I still think he would be head and shoulders better. He would have the benefits of modern training.
Sure.
He would have the benefits of modern nutrition. He probably wouldn't be drinking 20-ounce gin and tonics.
Might have an advisor.
Babe Ruth would have the benefits of modern nutrition. Yeah, that's good. That'll work out for you.
Yes.
Well, you also would have a minder and probably wouldn't be a sot. Michael Jordan would still be Michael Jordan playing today. Comparing right now, I think it's LeBron versus Michael. I think that's it. Charles Barkley came on that he wouldn't have LeBron in his starting five all time. All due respect to Charles Barkley, that's ridiculous.
Well,
I don't care who you got to take out; he's in your starting
five. Who does he have playing the? What is he? Does he have LeBron at the four or the three?
Well, he still has Larry Bird, in which is I'm sorry, no.
Larry Bird was pretty good.
Larry Bird was
he could play
an all time legend.
There's an argument whether I would go with Larry Bird, but whether you'd have Larry Bird or Dr. J at that point. You go with Larry Bird, but I mean, Larry Bird's not a prohibitive. I'm automatically in that spot.
I grew up on Long Island watching Dr. J.
Yeah, play for
the Nets.
Sure.
You go Larry Bird.
800-348-2551 is our telephone number. We're joined today by Mark McGuire, who, by the way, is the executive sports editor of the Daily Gazette, and Keith Strudler, who is the director of the Marist College Center for Sports Communication and our own sports commentator on today, Wednesday?
Tomorrow.
Or tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Right.
Unless today's Wednesday, and which it's summer for me.
Well, you know I don't usually do this program. This is usually Alan's slot, and it's usually a political open forum. So this is kind of a different thing for a Tuesday.
Why doesn't Alan do a sports show? That would be fascinating.
800-348-2551 is our telephone number. So I know you guys have been talking about it, but the World Croquet Championship wrapped up the end
of
last month.
Well, I'm heading. Oh, it's over.
You know, okay. Yeah. It begins again. The qualifying rounds begin again early in 2017.
Okay, well, I'll be there for that.
Yeah.
Where's that going to be?
Well, it depends. What do you want to play, the association style of croquet or golf style croquet?
I want to play the kind you play where you have a big cup of iced tea in a lawn in the Hamptons.
Wales is looking very strong.
Wales is looking very strong this year?
Absolutely.
USA always in the top five. They're a good team.
Not since Johnson retired in 2014.
Am I naive in just suggesting that I'm going to go with the Brits on this?
The Brits are good.
Okay.
Yeah, and actually, it's England again because they had changed over to the name Great Britain in the 90s, and now recently in the last—
leaving the European Union, there now.
Well, we'll find out about that. That's a different show.
Right.
But in the last 4 or 5 years, they've actually gone back to the name England. Sure. And they're a top three team.
Perfect.
Croquet.
Now, is that croquet, by the way, is it exactly the one that you buy like at the Target and you have the little...
I believe that is association croquet. There's golf croquet as well, which is very big in Egypt.
So there are different forms of this.
Yeah. All right, then we've exhausted that. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. We talk sports today and what fun we're having with Mark McGuire and Keith Strudler. We'll take a break and we'll be right back with a call or maybe not.
Support for WAMC comes from The Whistling Kettle, Troy and Boston Spa, offering tea-infused cuisine, dark chocolate strawberry scones, or a braised pork Cuban with tea, cocoa, and chili. TheWhistlingKettle.com. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. Kentix Construction, specializing in deep energy retrofits, passive house, zero energy homes, and historic restorations. Serving Western Massachusetts for over 25 years, KentixConstruction.com. Unusual Wedding Rings and More, 137 North Street, downtown Pittsfield, announcing their retirement on August 1st. Specializing in wedding and engagement rings, jewelry for special occasions, and everyday wear, UnusualWeddingRings.com. And Saratoga Jewish Cultural Festival presenting Letters to Sala, the account of a Polish teen and Nazi slave laborer. June 26th, 7 p.m. at Skidmore College, saratogajewishculturalfestival.org for details.
Is the number. It's Vox Pop. Ray Graff in for Alan today, and a little different on a Tuesday. Usually it's a political open forum. Today we talk sports with Daily Gazette executive sports editor Mark McGuire and Marist College Center for Sports Communication director Keith Strudler, and you can join in the conversation by calling us at 800-348-2551, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. And a very simple email from Gina, who writes, Copa and Euro Cup, question mark. Russian Olympic ban, question mark. Those are two topics we had planned to discuss today. So let's have at it. Let's go with the Russian Olympic ban first.
Obviously historic. Track and field has been an absolute disgrace in terms of the cheating that's going on. The Russians have been brazen about flouting the rules. It almost goes back to when we were kids in the 70s. If you remember the East
Germans.
Yes.
When all the women, the East German swimmers, female swimmers had mustaches.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was nice. Almost out in the open.
Yes.
They had to do
something. It was only semi-illegal at that point too, because it was, you know, it was kind of what are the rules and what's the law, and it was impossible to test for anyway.
So we've reached a point now where we've taken a historic step where we're not just banning individuals, but an entire team. And the question now is, what is going to be the response of the Russians?
You almost said the Soviets.
I almost said the Soviets.
It feels that way.
It feels that way. Yeah. It feels what they were doing really had a 1970s feel to it.
It's a beautiful thing.
Systemic, and it was government controlled. But the two points I think that are worth considering is, first, if anyone believes that banning the Russian track and field organization from the Olympics is cleaning it up, it's remarkably naive. So
okay.
It's I understand why Sebastian Coe is going, who's the head of the IAAF, a former Olympic champion himself. I understand why they feel the need to take this step, and I think Russia has been on the outs with the International Olympic Committee for quite some time. So I understand why they're doing this, and I guess you kind of have to. It's not necessarily going to take drugs, or it's not going to take drugs out of the Olympic Games, because there is doping all over, and they will always be one step ahead. So it raises that continued question of how do you keep anything clean. The other question, though, is what are we going to do about the Olympic Games? I mean, there is ongoing controversy with these Rio Games, which are an unmitigated disaster. They're I think, the first games that have announced before the Games that we are going to be in massive debt. Usually they wait till after,
yeah,
and then they say—
Surprise.
Yes. No, they've gone ahead and preemptively said, this is killing us. So that's A. But B, you know, countries have been— it seems as though there is a moment where countries may start to splinter off from this movement. I can imagine a country like Russia when they're told they're not allowed to compete in one of their preeminent sports, might eventually say, you know what, that's fine, we'll do it ourselves. And perhaps the ratings and, you know, without Russia in the games.
Come on. You go back to 1984, the Russians were out of the Los Angeles Olympics. I mean, these things happen, right?
But there isn't, you know, being in the Olympics is no longer as valuable a commodity as it once was. There are world championships in every single sport. You don't need the Olympics anymore.
You do need the Olympics. You need, because it is called the Olympics, you need the Olympics. If you are an international sports entity, you need to be represented at the Olympics. You can certainly survive not going, especially to this one. I imagine there are a few Russians on those teams saying, oh, thank God, we don't have to go. We might live.
I think you can go and do almost every sport at this point and ask them, what would you rather win, a gold medal or something else? And you would find a majority saying, I'd rather win something else.
All right, well, let's take a break here from this scintillating conversation and go right to the phones, and let's welcome Francis in Johnstown. Francis.
Hi. Yeah, I just want an explanation of the goaltending rule, and I also wanted to make a comment about how fantastic it is in any sport watching great defense. I just think it adds so much to the game. I'd rather watch great defense than great offense. But I was wondering that block in the fourth quarter, the LeBron James, gosh, that looked like goaltending to me. Explain to me why it wasn't.
It was going up, right?
The ball's going up. As long as it's not on its way down, it is not goaltending. As long as it's not in the cylinder, as long as it's not on the rim.
And it hadn't hit the glass yet, right?
And it's
goaltending. Yeah, it looked like he trapped it against the backboard, though. Did he not?
That's okay.
It's okay as long as he does. He hit it off the backboard. As long as he's making contact before it hits the backboard, that's another component of goaltending, then it's okay. He basically...
Okay. You clarified that for me. I'm not a great basketball devotee. It just looked like it was, you know, on the border of goaltending. But thanks for the explanation.
Hey, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. And I think that's one of the great things that is different about this game is not a lot of great defense anymore in the NBA.
Well, one, I was actually talking to a former team executive from one of the teams a couple days ago, and he reminded me, and I'm sure you've watched basketball forever, that there's a huge difference between the preseason to the regular season, and then the regular season to the first round of the playoffs, then the first round of the second round, and then the second round. Until the finals are an entirely different property. What happens in the NBA finals, yeah, it's basketball, just like the regular season is basketball, entirely different. The defensive intensity that you're watching in the NBA finals is unsustainable throughout the course of an 82-game season. And so the Warriors are getting away with kind of wide-open threes that just aren't going to be there, particularly with a team like Cleveland that was committed to the switches, committed to the defense, committed to denying those three-point shots.
They didn't do a very good job of denying the three-point shots early on.
Not
in
the first
game.
Two games, but you couldn't do what Cleveland did for those last three games for an 82-game season. They'd all be in the hospital.
The switches and getting a body on Curry definitely took its toll on Curry in the last three games. And just to make a final point on LeBron, first player, NBA history, any series to lead a series, points, rebounds, assists, steals, blocks.
Dominant. Yeah, no doubt. Let's go over to line two. And David in Pittsfield. David, you're on with Keith Strudler and Mark McGuire.
Well, thank you very much. I would be interested in your gentleman's take or comments on the stunning end of the Le Mans 24-hour race Sunday morning, where the Toyota car, comfortable lead, goes 23 hours, 54 minutes, and loses drive and ends up nowhere.
Oh, boy,
that is frustrating.
The second-place Porsche inherited the lead, and the interesting part about that, though, is the two of the drivers of the second-place Porsche both raced at Lime Rock around here.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, but I mean...
It's happened to me on vacation. I'm right at the exit, the car breaks down.
I was going to say the same thing. Often, I have to get out and I push. Right. Which is our gas station. If there's a gas station close by.
I guess there could be a gas station nearby. But
the way the rules are is they go nowhere. That's it.
No,
they're out.
Yeah. And I haven't really followed that in many years, but that's a really exciting endurance. And you can make the case that driving a race car is not a sport, but if you're driving 23, 24 hours in a team, that's grueling.
I think race car driving is 100% a sport, and it's a rigorous sport. It's got all the elements of what one might could consider from a definition perspective. I mean, it's just you happen to have an engine behind you, but it is. I 100% put it as a sport. I think NASCAR is a sport. I think all this stuff is a sport. I don't know much. Anything I'd be telling you about the 24 hours Le Mans race would be coming from Wikipedia. So it probably.
Oh, really? But I bet McGuire knows some stuff.
Okay,
go ahead.
He's on his phone.
Go ahead, Mark.
On my phone. No, but it is fascinating in terms of you go through such an endurance race. You know, just getting caught at the wire. The one thing that I can only bring any context to is you see that in horse racing all the time. I know that Toyota did have a massive lead. I can say that because I've known that for about 35 seconds.
how much trouble is that mechanic in right now, by the way?
Absolutely.
There's a mechanic.
It isn't one thing. It's the team. It's everything.
You got to make a change.
It's no one fault. Somebody didn't do something right.
So what happened to the car? Do we know?
I'm not 100% sure.
He was a Camry, and he probably should have been in it.
It just failed. I mean, but it was just crushing.
Yeah.
Crushing.
Had the radio on.
I mean, you got two laps to go after all that effort and time and money and everything else, and you're stuttering along, and it's over.
You see that in horse racing all the time, where you see a horse leading for 95% of the race and gets caught by a nose at the wire.
Yeah, it's Buckner, Bill Buckner.
The point is, they didn't even get caught. I take the win anytime, but you got to feel as you really didn't earn it. Yeah. You know, it's not like the game Sunday night. The Cavs won. Great, good game. The other team that lost, they were there. You know, could have gone either way.
Yeah, they didn't stop playing with 3 minutes left.
Suddenly, you're handed it. I take it, but it's not like, gee, I really won that.
Well, in all fairness, I think Golden State basically did stop playing.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I mean, they kind of the same thing.
Hey, David, thanks a lot for the call. Great call.
Yeah, take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. No croquet calls.
Le Mans is a new one.
That's good.
That's good.
We have a list of esoteric sports
on
this program, and that's one we can add, and I like it. I like it a lot. Let's go over to Kerry in Plainfield. Kerry, you're on.
Well, Ray and guests.
Hi.
I'm a big-time listener at WAMC, and soon one of the bigger sporting events in the nation is going to be happening in the heart of the WAMC radio area. And that's Saratoga Racecourse is going to be opening up.
Oh, yeah.
And what I'd like to hear sometime, I know you guys do opening day at a lot of the places where we have visual and performing arts, Tanglewood, Williams Theater Festival. I would love to see opening day broadcast on WAMC.
That would be really cool. I don't know if logistically it could happen, but I know Joe likes to go up to the track, and I think Ian knows a thing or two about that. I'm not a big... I don't play the ponies, but...
You don't like to lose money, Ray?
Oh, I love to lose money, but I do it at the casino. that's how I roll. But, that's a great point, Kerry, and thank you for that.
It really is. Saratoga is really unique in the sense that it's horse racing, but it's really part of culture in the Capital Region. And you don't even have to be a hardcore horse racing fan to appreciate what it means and the things that surround it. People have been going for years. I've been going for years. You do not want to rely on my handicapping, but
no, absolutely not.
Absolutely not. But at the same time, it is an amazing experience for anyone who's listening out there who hasn't partaken in the Saratoga experience. By all means, go. It is a tremendous day. It's a tremendous meet.
Now I've gotten into this before. Your horse, Mark. Your horse guy.
I'm not a horse guy. I'm a Saratoga guy.
Saratoga guy.
No, not so much.
I've been against horse racing for quite some time because I'm a, left of Lenin animal lover. But I have a problem with the horse racing industry.
And some people do.
And I respect that. I suppose in this country I'm still very much in the minority. Mark, you cover it. You're around it. Mm-hmm. Do you think that it's cleaned up at all?
I think there's always ways to make the sport safer. I think there's always a way to look at systemic problems. I think it's horrifying when a horse goes down on the track.
I can't see. I just can't watch it. I mean, that to me, just the prospect of seeing a horse breaking down on the track, is more than I can take. It's more than I can take.
And I have seen it.
Yeah, me too.
At the same time, I think there are safeguards that are in place. Are there enough? I'm not well versed enough to say that. Should there be every safeguard involved? Yes. Is it enough of a risk to ban the sport? I don't see that.
Yeah.
Number to call here is 800-348-2551. Let's see. We have a new phone system here. You can actually see on the screen above you if you can.
Oh, awesome.
You can see who's on.
I see. They took away the sticky, the post-it
pads,
notes.
Right. And so I see that Donald in Albany has been waiting
this
longer than
unbelievable.
Anybody. Donald, you're on.
It's Donald Norton.
Oh, thanks. Fellas, regarding the banning the Russian team from the Olympics,
yeah.
I think they're painting everyone with the same brush, as if all the athletes on the Russian team are dopers or using, performance-enhancing drugs.
Right.
So all the people who didn't use them or refused to use them, they can't participate either.
But isn't it the system? Isn't it the Russian way of checking that is at issue here? Isn't it?
I don't know.
Yeah. Well,
I haven't read it that closely.
Yes, it is. It's they are banning Russia. I mean, essentially the Russian track and field program. And at some point you have to ban the program because there is no way that they are going to have any faith that any of their athletes are clean. And they violated pretty much every code, every rule that the IOC aspires to live by. And the IOC has used the WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency, for quite some time to clean up exactly issues like this, to make sure that there's unlike any other sporting property in the world, the Olympics needs to have the perception of being clean. It has to. I mean, the NFL will have people doing steroids from now, from 50 years ago until the end of time, and they won't clean it up completely. And in the end of the day, none of us really care all that much because we want to watch football, and we want to watch football, and it's professional sports, and we kind of live with it. If the Olympics can't be perceived as being clean, it's dead in the water because no one wants to watch dirty Olympic sports because allegedly the athletes are doing it for more than just, earning a paycheck. They're doing it out of some higher calling. So if they can't be perceived as being clean, it ends. And so I guess, they're going to have to take a harder line. And there may be a few athletes. I doubt there are that many athletes on the Russian team that somehow didn't participate. By the way, I am sure there are many, many athletes on many Olympic teams, including the American Olympic teams, who also are using performance.
Bite your
drugs.
Tongue, Strudler. Keith Strudler is our guest. Also, Mark McGuire, who is the Daily Gazette executive sports editor. And before we take a break here, here's one that came in via email, who says, can you explain the nuances of the Major League Baseball draft? Specifically, the Anderson twins were both drafted, one by the Braves, one by the Blue Jays. Now they have to decide whether or not to go to college. What does that have to do with their drafted status? So proud that we have kids from this area we can follow through the Major League Baseball career. And, of course, Ian Anderson, he's done with Jethro Tull, and he went to Shenandoah, right?
Yes. Three people got your joke, by the way.
Okay. And he was in, the third pick in the first round? He was the third pick of the draft, right?
Yes, he was the third overall pick in the draft by the Atlanta Braves.
So before we get to the question here that came in via email, how much money is he expected when he signs this week? How much will he get?
He'll probably get in the neighborhood of $5 million.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Good neighborhood.
It's a pretty good neighborhood,
Yeah, and so the question was, they have to decide whether or not to go to college. I imagine he has 5 million reasons not to go to college at this time.
Right. There's two different situations. With the Major League Baseball draft, with American players as opposed to foreign players, it works two ways. There's the first-year player draft, which is you could draft either players who are in high school or players who are juniors in college. So there's two different entries. Players who are juniors are often players who were drafted in high school and chose not to sign, and then they go on to a college career.
Yeah.
A player, UAlbany, was drafted in the eighth round. He had been drafted in high school out of the sixth round. Ian Anderson, who was drafted number three overall, will probably sign because it's a lot of money.
$5 million.
Ben Anderson, his brother, is also a pitcher. He's slated to go to Binghamton University. He was drafted in the 26th round.
Aren't there like 900 rounds in baseball?
I mean, yes, they do go on for.
So yeah, there will not be a huge bonus.
No, but there could be some. There could be some coin. There could be some significant coin. Now, if you sign, you lose your eligibility to play in college.
Right.
Now he has a decision to make depending on how much money the Blue Jays offer. He could go back into college, play for 3 years, and then be drafted 3 years
later.
But
you have to stay for you can't then go after
your
first
year.
Yes,
you can't go after
your second
year. It's not like the NBA. Right, it's not like the NFL where you can. It's
don't you like this? Don't you like the baseball draft system? And don't you think it would be the NBA will never do it because it doesn't work for them? But don't you like the idea that they're given an opportunity to go right out of high school, and if they decide not to, the colleges can have some vested.
And
commitment.
The thing is, sometimes the college level playing 3 years, especially if you're a pitcher, a lot of these guys will go to college for 2, 3, or even the full 4, and they will come out and they will be so seasoned and so ready to go to the Matt Harvey's one. The guy the Mets drafted who went to the same high school as Steven Matz, he went to school and went, I think, Connecticut, and he was a high draft pick. He's making his money now. Keith Hernandez told a great story the other night about when he was drafted by the Cardinals organization in the early 70s. He was a late-round draft pick, and he had a full ride at Cal. He had that option to go to college, and so they offered him $30,000, which was probably pretty good money back
very
then.
Good money.
But Keith's father said, well, no way. They offered him maybe $5,000 and said, no, he's got a full ride. You have to do better than that. And negotiated like a real agent in the early 70s and got him several tens of thousands of dollars.
Well, I mean, it was really unheard of going into even the late 60s for baseball players to be drafted out of college. I mean, college players were not considered, for the most part,
they were spent already.
By the way, this is happening in basketball, too. This is happening in college basketball, where teams are not looking at people who have played 4 years of college basketball as viable NBA prospects because they say, well, they've already maximized. If they spent 4 years in college and they're only kind of just as good as the kids coming out of high school, their ceiling's pretty low.
Let's take a break here real quick, and then we'll jump back to this conversation. Mark McGuire from the Daily Gazette is here. Keith Strudler, our own sports commentator and of Marist College. Number to call is 800-348-2551. We'll be back after this 70s detective music.
Support for WAMC comes from John Lee & Company, providing estate dispersal, household sales, appraisals, and clean-out services adjusted to fit a variety of circumstances. JohnLeeAuctions.com. Tom McRae, Edward Jones Financial Advisor on University Drive, Amherst, Massachusetts. Member SIPC, Edward Jones, making sense of investing. EdwardJones.com/TomMcRae. Poughkeepsie Farm Project, connecting food, farm, and community. Organically grown CSA shares now available for the 2016 season. FarmProject.org. Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and now new American-made frames, where eyewear is an art. VisionExcelEyeCare.com. And the Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole-grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com.
.800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop Regraph in for Alan Shartok. Doing sports today instead of politics, and we're joined by Mark McGuire of the Daily Gazette and Keith Strudler of Marist College. And you wanted to finish up a point there, Mark?
Yeah, we're just talking about college players. There have been exceptions. I mean, Lou Gehrig did go to Columbia, and even into the 60s, Tom Seaver pitched at USC. There were other players, but they were sort of the exceptions rather than rule. Most college players weren't looked at as draft as future major leaguers. There was Frankie Frisch, is another Hall of Fame Fordham Flash, Frankie Frisch. But
when I think of prospects, you know, of Major League Baseball prospects, I think of Columbia.
Yale. I mean, Ron Darling went to Yale. Great pitcher for the Mets.
Sure.
But now it's organization by organization where they look at, do they want to go for the high school route, which is a longer path to the major leagues, or do they go the college route, which are considered more, quote-unquote, finished products?
It's also tough. it's also tough to be a college baseball player. I think it's underscored. It might be, from my perspective, I understand football, the commitment and watching film, and but the travel schedule on the college baseball players is brutal because they try to compress this huge season into a couple of months.
Yeah, but you learn your craft. I mean, you're battle-tested, and that's what some of these guys who come out of college are they're ready for the majors.
And you know,
almost.
It's really fascinating. The players that we see at the Tri-City Valley Cats locally in the New York Penn League, those are mostly college players. And it is a really long season. They get jumped right into another season, even though it's a short season. Really interesting week. The Brooklyn Cyclones have played four games this season. One has been a 20-game opener, 20-inning opening day.
God. There should be a rule against that.
Wait a minute. And last night against the Valley Cats, they played 17 innings.
Gotta love it.
So their first four games, they played a 20-inning game.
That's awful.
17 game. And these are
people sticking around. Is someone in the stands?
Yeah,
Ray would be there.
Yeah, but here's more. But a more concern is they have to baby these college pitchers. They only pitch them four innings.
Yep.
So they got second baseman throwing innings. They got outfielders throwing.
And no one could hit. You got a ball boy pitching. No one could just. No one could score at that point.
It was a 10-9 final game. It was a softball.
Hitting a baseball is the toughest thing you're going to do.
I know.
It's not easy.
Before we get back
to the phones, this one came in from Teresa in Saugerties via email. The Albany Devils have been a pretty good team for the last few years, but attendance at the Times Union Center ranks pretty low among all AHL teams. The River Rats used to draw a lot more fans. What do you think can be done to fill at least the lower level, or is the popularity of pro hockey waning in the capital region?
But it's not the NHL. It's
good hockey.
It's the second best hockey league in the world. It's a little.
Have you seen? Have you ever been? No, truth. Full disclosure.
No, I have not.
Okay.
I'm sure it's great.
It's very good.
It's the second best hockey league.
Gordie Howe played in the AHL.
It's better than the KHL.
But it's impossible. But tell me a second tier league in this country. We're not European soccer here. Where everyone watches, there's like 80 leagues and everyone seems to think they're all really important. In this country, tell me at any level, at the college level, where the second tier people tell how many people get excited about the Division II national championship.
But you're just asking the emailer is just asking them to compare apples to apples. So the Albany market has ranked near the bottom of the AHL market against markets that are much smaller than the Albany market.
And maybe that's the key.
The problem that's been over the years, and there is some revisionist history. The River Rats in later years did not draw well. There's a couple problems. One is there's a lot of other sports teams. There's a lot of competition in this market. There's a lot of other things to do. There's Siena. There's UAlbany.
Right. And that's my point.
There's college hockey. So there's a lot of other things going on.
So the smaller towns, like the AAA baseball towns, that might be the only game in town. And so people will go to that, and it's huge. It's great baseball.
Hershey draws tremendously well in the AHL because there's not other things going on in Hershey, Pennsylvania.
So, I'll ask this question because I live, I work at Marist, which is Poughkeepsie, which is about an hour and a half south of here, and then I live even a little bit further south than that in Beacon. How much does this market, specifically the Albany market, get influenced by New York City? Because for me, where I am, you can't put anything in Beacon, New York, because it's a vacuum.
That's part of the competition, because there's certain people in this market that view it as a major league sports market, and we're an excerpt. So they have disposable income. They can have a choice. We can go to two Albany Devil games or a couple of Siena games, or I could save my money and go see the Rangers.
Or I'll watch my TV. I think there's got to be a lot of fans that would prefer that.
All right, a couple of quick emails and then back to the phones. This one's from Myra. Just wondering if any of you watched the women's NCAA final. So far, the sports show is 98% men, 1% cars, and 1% horses. Just saying. I did watch.
More than 1% cars. We gave that a fair deal.
But you know what? I did watch the NCAA
last time
finals.
Last time I was on, we talked about UConn women.
I actually watched some of the softball.
Best team basketball you're going to see is right there in the NCAA women's finals at March Madness.
What's interesting, I think, if we're going to kind of go down this road, is how much the NBA, I'm sure you all saw this, right after the NBA, after the final game was over, before they gave the trophy ceremony, they did a promotional commercial for the WNBA 20th season. Their attendance has been on the wane for quite some time. And I think there is a push certainly a dedicated push for the first time in some time to bring the WNBA kind of back into the public conscious. I don't know if it's going to work or if it isn't. The reality is, and this is not, you know, in any way an excuse for us not talking about it, but there has been limited interest both in women's college basketball and in women's professional basketball.
All right, let's go to Ron, who's been waiting a long time, but his question here will dovetail with what we just talked about. Ron, you're on in Pittsfield.
Okay, I see a lot of women shivering in the cold and football sidelines. The men are always in the warm booth, and I think getting to play-by-play, I only heard of one woman that's in New York Yankees or on the New York Yankees radio. What's happening?
I think that's a very good point. Women. I think it's a great point. And actually, on the ESPN Major League broadcasts, there is finally a woman in the booth doing commentary and doing a great job. So what do you have to say about that, boys?
Well, you're starting to see more and more female play-by-play announcers by the fact that we're not startled when we hear a female voice doing men's games. Is there a great disparity? Absolutely. Is it still the sideline reporter, the quote-unquote domain of the females? Reporters at, you know, whether it be Monday Night Football or Saturday afternoon college football, yes. But I think the idea of a female play-by-play announcer, whether it be college basketball or college football, is no longer seen as, oh, this is a out there experiment. The fact is, when I turn on a college football game, let's say on a Saturday night, and I hear a female announcer, I don't necessarily even notice it.
No, and that's also, Mark, because you respect the game and you're not kind of a sexist pig. I assume so. I mean, you know you well enough to...
Do you know him that well?
Ask my wife and daughter.
All right. There we go.
But I look, when networks... And you're right, it's an indictment on us as a society that we haven't moved further and that there aren't more women in the booth calling games. And it's not because there's not competencies, because there are women who have the skill set and who should be cultivated to do this. You know, when women have entered the play-by-play booth, they universally have gotten a lot of rebuke from the public, unfairly. And they are critiqued much more diligently and much more harshly by the general public than men who come in and do, you know, a mediocre job. So it's a much higher bar for them to cross. It's going to take brave networks. And ESPN, you know, ESPN gets bashed all the time. Give them the credit for diversifying. The SportsCenter is one of the most diverse programs, and that wasn't necessarily an easy thing for them to do. I think it's going to take networks realizing that, you know, not half, but, you know, 30-40% of the football watching audience in this country is female. And, we're getting there.
And let's go over to
Pam Ward is the announcer I was trying to think of with ESPN.
And by the way, just Doris Burke. Just to give
fantastic,
unbelievable the interview questions she did, the NBA Finals, she was a rock star.
Let's go to Pierre in Pittsfield. Pierre, you're on.
Yes, just a quick one. I'm not a fan of horseback racing. Almost 60 years ago, in fact, over 60 years ago, I witnessed the horse accident, death of the horse at the Great Barrington Fair, and I still have nightmares about it. I was accompanied by my old, slightly older brother, and we saw this happen at the infield track. The horse got impaled.
Ouch.
And just a horror show. So parents ought to be ready to protect their kids from seeing things like that.
Yeah.
It is an interesting...
That's about it.
Well, it is an interesting question, though. I mean, you can go to horse racing and see something horrific. You can go to auto racing and see something horrific, too.
You can go to Studio A and see something horrific.
Yeah.
That's right here.
That's a terrifying point.
Indeed.
But I mean, it is something that is something to think about, though. If you do, you would you bring worry about bringing kids to an auto race because of what they might see? Would you worry about bringing your kids to horse racing, even if you're a fan of horse racing, because of something they might see? I wouldn't necessarily think twice about horse racing or auto racing. But then again, you have to. That thought is something worth considering.
Let's take that a step further. How about football, where you see guys getting carted off the field? I mean, they're not dead when they leave the field. They certainly look like it when they get pulled off in an ambulance. My son recently, my oldest, 8, Sloan, he came home with a flyer from the Beacon City, rec leagues, and it was sign up for football. And before I even got to see it, because my answer was going to be no, my wife basically said, not a chance. Like, not a chance. It's not going to happen. We're going to watch football, and that's fine. So, you know, we've put some okay. strict limits on what's going to happen. But I agree. The horse racing, I actually think, would be tough because my kids love animals. It would be very hard for them to watch that.
All right, this one came in via email from Mark. Good afternoon. I have to disagree with you guys. Because of the NBA changing the rules and removing the tough-nosed defense of the past, there's no way that today's teams would be able to beat Jordan at his Bulls. Even the Knicks, with Patrick Ewing, John Starks, and Charles Oakley, despite never having won a title, would be able to beat a LeBron team today.
Hold
on. That's from Mark.
Wait, the Knicks, how many points would the Knicks score? Like 12 points against this? I mean,
First off, the Knicks were responsible for the rule change. I'm a Knicks fan, but the
Derek Harper, I believe, himself.
Yeah, I mean, the Knicks were responsible for playing games in the 70s, in the 80s, and keeping
the
scores
90s.
Down low. No, keeping the scores
yeah,
down
the score.
Low.
Yeah, you could win. It was like watching Wisconsin basketball.
Yeah, they were the ones responsible for the rule changes. I respectfully disagree.
All right, fair enough. Let's go to Steve in Ware, Mass. Steve, you're on.
Afternoon, gentlemen. You have a wonderful show going.
Thank you.
It's all because Iorizo's not here.
All right, go ahead.
I want to just touch on a subject that you guys were talking about earlier in your program, sort of the generational arguments that go on between fathers and sons or whatever, about great athletes, great teams. My dad played on the 1933. It gives you an idea of how old I am. Well, he was pretty old when I was born. But 1933 Colgate University, Andy Kerr team, that was undefeated, untied, unscored upon, and uninvited to the Rose Bowl.
Ooh.
But I spent about a month in the NFL after college, a little college in Maine where I played football and hockey. And I met guys like Jethro Pugh and Bob Lilly. And
you played for the Cowboys?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, 1977.
Cool.
Tony Dorsett was the first round draft choice. But these guys were, like, huge, incredibly big, and incredibly strong. And so I'd sit with my dad, and he'd say, oh, this kid from Erasmus Hall High School in Brooklyn, New York, played on our 33 football team in Colgate, and he was unstoppable. He was just giant. I said, how big was he, Dad? Oh, giant, man. He weighed like 198.
That could be any of us after a big meal, yeah.
Well,
I would just sort of chuckle to myself and go, okay, thanks, Dad. Good point.
But that goes through all the eras, because like Jerry Kramer, the guy who was the led the Green Bay Packers sweep, was the massive offensive tackle for the Packers. He was 265.
That's
a linebacker today. So
which is problematic. It's problematic because we know the kind of health risks they're putting themselves under, and we know later on what that's going to mean.
How big did you play at?
In college in Maine, I played at about 205.
What position?
I was quarterback and place kicker.
Okay, quarterback.
But with the college I went to in Maine, tiny little college, Bowdoin College, we'd attract about 7,000 people for hockey games and about 700 people for football games.
It's cold. You're going to sit out there in the cold. It's tough.
I went to one of my daughter's field hockey games in the NCAAs against Bowdoin in November. It's not a pleasant place to be playing.
That's what they make those bubbles for.
Well, Steve, we're about out of time here, but thank you for the insight. We appreciate the call.
All right. Any generational sort of funny things like that, I'd love to hear them. Thanks, boys.
Thanks a lot. You know, I got to tell you, he played at least for a month with some of those guys who made my life as a 70s Giants fan just absolutely miserable.
Awful.
Jethro Pugh and I don't know if Too Tall Jones was in by then.
It was nice of you placing that, though.
Oh, Too Tall Jones was number one pick in 72.
Oh, yeah, so he was well into his career by then.
I only know Too Tall Jones is a boxer.
Oh, yeah, not a great boxer, but a big man. All right, this was fun. Mark McGuire, thank you for being here. What's in the paper tomorrow? Anything good?
It's my day off.
You know something?
You know what's in the paper tomorrow? Some great stuff, but not me.
Okay, man. And Keith Strudler, you'll have a commentary tomorrow about, you'll be whining about something, right?
I don't know yet. I was hoping for some inspiration from the show. I think car racing.
Done.
Lamont.
How about croquet, my
croquet.
Friend? All right. Well, thank you both for being here. Support comes from Amherst Copy and Design Works.
I never gave my curling mock draft.
We'll do the curling mock draft next time. Mm-hmm. Support comes from Amherst Copy and Design Works, offering printing and copying, sign making and design services from booklets to stationery and labels to lawn signs in downtown Amherst, Massachusetts. AmherstCopy.com. The Lake George Association, formed in 1885 to protect Lake George water for New Yorkers. LakeGeorgeAssociation.org/join. ClipCentric Albany, a local video services division of ClipCentric, producing video advertisements for business throughout the capital region for web, mobile, and TV. Albany.ClipCentric.com. And Landis, the phonetics on this are just hilarious. I'll show you boys in a minute. I can say the word. Landis Arboretum, Esperance, New York, offering plant collections, hiking trails, old growth forest, concerts, classes, and more. LandisArboretum.org. Well, that's it for the show. Thanks to Mark and Keith and Pete Iorizzo for not being here today. Keith Strudler will have a commentary tomorrow. Zach Malloy, our engineer. Great job. Susie Chekai answered the phones. Jessica Blaustein Marshall, our producer. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, we'll do a special on podcasting. Stay tuned for that one. News is next.